Derby Spirit has pinched the Oaks by four lengths. But a champion becomes a legend. Makati Deaver has won it.
Hello and welcome. This is .com and the Den Mondays. I'm Roger Aldridge and my stable mate in the Den on a Monday from Wolf Den is Richard Irvin. Rich, not a weekend where it went really as we thought, but it was enthralling nonetheless. And one particular result or one particular race, I think, has set us up for an even more exciting spring than what we maybe thought was in store.
Yeah, the prize fighters, Mr. B and Pride of Jenny, they went at it again and they weren't even favoured in the race, but it was a brilliant race. I think it's a race that we'll remember for a really long time. Bring on the spring. There's so much to unpack from Saturday, and the spring is just looking so exciting.
Yeah, that rivalry, it's like Carlton and Collingwood, the Storm and the Broncos, and that leads us beautifully into our straight six, where we take you through the half dozen things that really mattered across the weekend of racing. And Mr. Brightside's redemption song, what a race it was. Pride of Jenny and Mr. Brightside running her down. They go to the line together. And like you said, it's a title fight. He is so tough and honest.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And Tino looked like he was going to be a big chance in the finish at about the 400 or something. And then Mr. B went straight past him. And then at the 200, looked like Mr. B was going to go straight past Pride of Jenny, but she fought on really well. And he only just got there in the end. Brilliant race. He's such a good horse. Obviously, he won the Makati Deaver Stakes last year. That was his seventh Group 1 on Saturday. He's just so consistent. The Hayes boys love him so much, and they were pretty up and about it. You could tell they were really passionate, and it was redemption for them. Pride of Jenny, it's the first time they've beaten Pride of Jenny in a while. Really good stuff.
It's like, Rich, when you have an Ashes series and Australia wins the first test and England wins the second and you go to the third, that's what it's like with these two just going head-to-head so often. We can see here Ben Hayes and his wife, Grace Ramage, who we know quite well, are celebrating. They love this horse. This is the favourite horse. This is the favourite horse of all the boys at the Hayes stable. And up at Yarrawarra at that property at Lindsay Park, the reimagined Lindsay Park, they've got corners of the property, stables named after the great horses. And you got a taste of exactly one of the areas that they have up there.
Yeah, so we can see the Better Loosen Up bar on screen now. And so Better Loosen Up is the next best thing to Mr. Brightside, really. There's a lot of comparisons between Better Loosen Up and Mr. Brightside. And Better Loosen Up really launched David Hayes' career back 30 years ago. And I did a podcast there. It's our most popular podcast ever. I'll put the link to it in the description so people can go and watch it if you haven't seen it. It's really, really good racing content. But they do, JD Hayes says it, they do get in there every now and then and really give it a nudge when it's worthwhile. And it just did occur to me after Mr. Brightside won, I thought, I reckon, they'll work out a time and all the staff from Lindsay Park will get into the Better Loosen Up. They'll have a rip-roaring night. I'd love to be there. I won't be there, but anyone who is there, I hope you have a great night. You did make the point that the twins have had their own babies, which might make it not as
yeah,
big.
Yeah, JD and Will have both got I think you're probably about 6 weeks old. There's not much between them. So I don't know how many late nights they'll have in store or leave passes they've got up their sleeve. And in terms of the beaten brigade, let's start with Pride of Jenny. As you mentioned, she was back near her best. Everyone was worried after that first up run and those concerns were allayed.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really good run. I guess the interesting thing her is where does she go to next? Listening to Tony Otterbrey talk in the press, he said that the King Charles is not a definite. And we all know that, look, the Cox Plate seems like she'll end up there. The big question is where does she go next? So I love putting Twitter polls up on a Sunday and asking the pack what they think. And here's the result of this one. So where would you run Pride of Jenny next? Bear in mind, Kieran said he thinks her sweet spot now is 2,000 metres. Disclaimer, I spelt bear wrong. You picked it up straight away. Don't include Rog in that bad spelling. It's not on him, it's on me. Moving on from that, so look, most people think the Turnbull over 2,000 metres is the go. I think that's about 3 weeks away. I like the Fian. I think the Fian over 1,600 metres at the Valley, just under 2 weeks away, so it's Friday, grand final eve. Mr. Brightside looks like he's a pretty good chance to run in that, and that would be brilliant. Those two going at it again, the Fian. We know we've got the Group 1 Manicato on the same night. But I'd love to see both of them be in that. And I think that you just about sell the Valley out if you got that race there on that night. So she's right in the thick of it. She's going to cause a lot of issues over spring, and that's what we need.
Yeah, golden ticket into the Cox Plate too, the Fiend Stakes. So Jenny and Brightside don't need a golden ticket. They'll be in the Cox Plate if they want to go there. No worries about that. Hey, I was chips in VS Sestina as I was in the Queen Elizabeth earlier this year. And again, she was beaten as a short price favourite, albeit did drift a little bit. There's a common theme between those two runs, the Queen Elizabeth and the Maccabi Diva Stakes at the weekend with a certain horse bowling along at extreme clip up front.
Yeah, it seems like VS Sestina likes it when there's not too much pressure out in front. And if you go back and have a look at the two times she's won in Australia, you can see the pace is pretty slow and she just likes that. She can, you know, sprint off a slow pace. When the pace is on, it doesn't seem to suit her at all. And I guess you're going to have to factor that into her as a betting proposition going forward. Warmonger was outstanding. Can't get a better Caulfield Cup trial. I saw that bookies have put him into favour for the Caulfield Cup. I think that's a bit of an overreaction. Seems like any time any horse runs, you know, remotely well, they want to put them straight into favour for the Caulfield Cup and Melbourne Cup. We've had about 10 different favourites for all these for both those races over the last few months. That's about it from the race. Great race, and we move on.
It was, and we do move on. We move on to Growing Empire, who won the Poseidon Stakes, the three-year-old race of the weekend. Now, on a day where we saw many short price favourites rolled in big races, he was the one that delivered, and he's got fans growing. The Empire Army's growing by the week. He looks a serious racehorse who's poised for a big payday somewhere this spring.
Yeah, if you can see on the screen, just then, first settler comes up to his hind quarter, and Growing Empire says, "Not today, buddy," and just goes into another gear and showed us basically that he sort of got two lengths on all the others in that field. So much opportunity in front of Growing Empire. Just firstly on First Settler, great run. He's right in the thick of the Coolmore Stud Stakes. I can see him winning the Coolmore Stud Stakes, even if Growing Empire is in it. It's improvement to come for First Settler. And we remember last year, the Coolmore Stud Stakes was won by Osmosis. Osmosis was a bit of a boom horse, went off the boil and then came out at one at about $15 in the Coolmore Stud Stakes. I can see a horse like First Settler profiling that like that as well. Let's move on to Growing Empire. So it's just a case of like where to next. He could even run in the Manicato in a couple of weeks' time. A lot of people are talking about Everest. I was listening to Damien Oliver on the Wrap. He said that he's so versatile, Growing Empire, that you know you can put him anywhere you want in a race, and he's just got the ability to go bang. And he thinks that that's a real plus for putting a three-year-old into the Everest. The logical race probably looks like the Dane Hill on Turnbull Day. So the Dane Hill's an 1100-meter race. Just for the three-year-olds. Giga Kick was in it a couple of years ago and then got plucked out of that by James Harron and went on to win the Everest. So that seems like the logical race for Growing Empire next, and also First Settler. Be interesting to see what they end up doing. And then you'd think that the Coolmore Stud Stakes is a lock. And I think we've got the market for that, Rog, don't we?
Yeah, let's have a look at that. And you've got Growing Empire as a $3 favourite with Ladbrokes. This is on the 2nd of November. Stormboy at $8. Along with Traffic Warden, who was victorious on the weekend, that second line of betting. Then First Settler's there at $9. So not quite the price that we saw for Osmosis last year, but this is shaping up. Coleman and Payasugi, both in the market as well. There's so many great three-year-old races that we're going to get to this spring. It's very, very exciting. The other exciting race, of course, if we're talking from a futures point of view, is the Melbourne Cup. And Point King got the golden ticket into the cup with victory in the Archer Stakes on the weekend. Now, the Archers moved to its new slot from Derby Day to mid-September. And well, the owners of Point King wouldn't sell that golden ticket, as you were throwing out as an opportunity last week, Rich, because it's Team Williams, and Team Williams lives for the bloody Melbourne Cup.
They do have dedicated their life to it, isn't it? Yeah, really dour win by Point King. Look, there's a bit of criticism that he only beat a hurdler because Hit the Road Jack was a hurdler. But look, it was a competent win. I was listening to RSN Sundays yesterday and they were saying that they think that Point King's a top five chance in the Melbourne Cup now just because of it'll be down in the weights, the Williams, Team Williams factor. Jamie Carr,
you mentioned about they win a race, they go up in the futures to a favourite or second. Well, Point King is now second favourite for the Melbourne Cup off the back.
Mate, what's going on, eh? It's like, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? But anyway, moving on from that, the other interesting thing, Jamie Carr said that he's a bit of a thinker. I've never really heard a jockey describe a horse as a thinker, but I think what they're saying then there is that he does a lot of, thinks about what's going on in the race and maybe not completely concentrating on fully extending and going as fast as he can. So there could be a little gear change and stuff involved there. But she thinks once they get on top of him being a bit of a thinker in the race, there's even more improvement to come with him. The other horse in the race, Berkshire Breeze, pretty controversial. A lot of people thought it was ridden the wrong way. Maybe they were proved right. But a lot of people think that it was still a run of a lot of merit. His next chance to get into the Melbourne Cup is the Bart Cummings on Turnbull Day. And once again, I think that's the last golden ticket race. Berkshire Breeze and Point King are the two to follow out of the race, which, you know, they were favourites. So I'm not saying a whole lot there, but good to see the Team Williams colours win. We saw Point King in track work earlier in the week. We did a podcast at Sam Friedman Stables, and we'll be publishing that next week. Great content because Sam Friedman just speaks so well.
Very well educated young man is Sammy Friedman.
He is, and I've been editing up, and he just speaks so well. I can tell when I've got something really strong, and this podcast with him is going to be really strong.
Excellent. I love a good plug in the middle of one podcast for another. Don't forget Moody on the Mic comes out every Wednesday night. Traffic Warden diverted the storm, as you put it. The Run to the Rose was a great race. It looked the best race of the day in Sydney on paper. And we thought Stormboy was back to his best after that first up win at 1100, but he missed the kick again. And he was wasn't beaten much, but I think there were other horses in that race who had their shine taken off of more than Stormboy, but certainly there's a lot of shine that goes on to Traffic Warden now. And James Cummings has always been bullish about this horse.
Yeah, look, Stormboy simply can't keep doing it. If he keeps missing the start, he's never going to reach his potential. Bit of criticism of Hippo's ride. People were saying that they thought he should have gone to plan B and taken a sit and then tried to, you know, sprint over the top of him. I personally believe that he had done that, it wouldn't have changed the result. I don't think he has that really sharp turn of foot that would have allowed him to win. I think he still would have got beat by Traffic Warden. I think the only way he can win is doing what he did in San Domenico. He's got to jump, get on the bunny, and just keep rolling like those Waterhouse Bot horses do and just grind everything else into the ground. Moving on from him, Traffic Warden, obviously outstanding. There's talk about Traffic Warden in the Everest. James Cummings said after the race that it's no lock that AF Cabin will go to the Everest, and every chance that Traffic Warden could as well. Obviously, Traffic Warden goes onto the Golden Rose now, where he's right in the thick of the market. We'll have a bit of a look at that in a second. Other horses, Linebacker, outstanding. Mm-hmm. People are saying that they can see Linebacker even winning the Golden Rose. Great Caulfield Guineas trial. We know that Linebacker has always been focused on the Caulfield Guineas. John O'Shea, Tom Charlton. So, they'd be very, very happy with him. Switzerland and Bustling, no good. I think they finished last and second last. Not sure what's going on with Switzerland. And Bustling, I think the owners of him, the new owners, Max Whitby, Neil Werrett, those people, they'd be pretty disappointing. He just didn't seem to have anything when the pressure came on. And in my opinion, they've already said that he's got an Everest slot and they're going to put him in there. I don't think on that run you can put him in the Everest. I think he's got to show a lot of improvement. Otherwise, they need to take their ticket elsewhere.
The only thing is, though, Rich, is because they own the horse, whatever the prize money is, they get the lot. So if they take another horse into their slot, then they've got to split any prize money. But you're going to have to weigh up the pros and the cons. If you're Neil Werrett and co, here's the Golden Rose market. You can see on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube now, Broadside and Traffic Warden, equal favourites at $4, $5 for Stormboy, Linebacker 11, Autumn Glow, well, she's at $13 and a node. And Emirate at 15's a lot bigger odds the rest. But that's going to be a cracking race, the Golden Rose. It always is. I love it. And, if the run of the Rose was the appetizer, the main course is going to be very tasty indeed. Hey, Sunshine in Paris. Wowee. Jolly Star was a short price favourite in the Scirocco Stakes. And you speak of horses for the Everest. Sunshine in Paris made a very strong case. It's got the slot there now and yeah, upstage the hot pot in Jolly Star.
Yeah, so many said that Tommy Berry's ride was the ride of the day. He just got Sunshine in Paris in the perfect spot where he knew that with that pace on, he'd be able to, you know, really light Sunshine in Paris up. And it was a great run too, considering she was first up and she really left Jolly Star flat-footed. So John Camilleri, who owns Sunshine in Paris, has a Everest slot. It's been confirmed that Sunshine in Paris will now go into the Everest, more than likely without another run in John Camilleri's spot. She'll be right in the thick of the Everest, of course. Jolly Star, another one who I think that... I don't think anyone would be ready to commit to her for an Everest slot quite yet. I think that they'd probably just want to see her again. She beat up a pretty ordinary field last start and then, you know, still ran pretty well on Saturday, but I don't know if she's a lock for an Everest start yet. What do you think?
Not yet, but there's a lot to play out in terms of the Everest because you don't have to commit to anything and there's a lot of water to go under the bridge and it's shaping up as a fascinating race. I think they got it right with the Everest, Rich. I think it's turned into quite a talking point of a race. I think they did well.
They've done very well. They've done very well, yeah.
All right, the final part of our Straight Six today is Racing Victoria's new race fields legislation. We're going to welcome in Kingsley Bartholomew a little bit earlier this week to get his take on it. Welcome, Kings.
Thank you.
Look, let's set this up for in layman's terms because it is a very complicated issue. But essentially what we have now with all the taxes and charges, the book fees that the bookmakers have to pay to remain profitable, they give poorer prices to the punters just to keep their margins at an acceptable level. Now, these changes that are being proposed mean they're going to pay less fees. And if they won't, like they won't have to pay race field fees on free bet turnover, which is a big one. So basically what happens is their margins will increase. And if they do the right thing, and they should, the prices the punters will get will be more lucrative. Now, the flow-on effect for that is if punters are getting better prices, they're going to wager more often. They're potentially going to wager more, and that increases turnover. And that's what needs to happen. Turnover needs to get back to a level because that money is going to get pumped back into the industry. Now, Kings, I'll ask you first, what are your thoughts on this? And from a punter's point of view, the pricing at the moment that we're seeing from many bookmakers is not an acceptable level, really, for unless you're just a very recreational gambler.
Yeah, I mean, to keep it pretty simple, it's gone over the edge so much where the bookies are paying too much in taxes and product fees and everything else. So any changes, I applaud the changes. I think it's a start. It's a good start. I think there's a long way to go. But any changes that are going to increase competition and get the marketplace in a more competitive state, I applaud.
Rich, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I like it. I've had a bit to do with it. I have quite a lot to do with all the regulators, over the years, and they're really good at reaching out to me, which I always appreciate. I think that it's a much more balanced, measured set of product fees for the bookies to deal with. They had a bit of a hybrid system where it was a cross between turnover and also profit and loss. They've gotten rid of that and made it much more manageable for the bookies. I don't know, the mid-tier bookies who struggle with that, they're very happy about that. So I think the product fees is a step in the right direction. I also realise that it costs a lot of money to run the racing game. So, punters do have to pay pretty well. But I do agree with Kings, it's gone too far, especially with the imposter point of consumption tax. That's the thing that's really... as soon as point of consumption tax came in, that's when it started to get really, really hard for punters. Hopefully we get some relief in that area. And there's also minimum bet limits. I've always been a big proponent of minimum bet limits, and they've got a lot of feedback from punters and also bookies and stuff and made a few changes to the minimum bet limits, which is a good thing, made it more realistic to what today's marketplace is like. And from my own point of view, I'm going to have conversations with other principal racing authorities to try and get them to follow in Racing Victoria's direction. Because the problem at the moment is that it's great that you get some change in Victoria, but then you don't get in other states, and it's all a bit of an alphabet soup. So, I'd like to get some consistency across the board. But, yeah, we're definitely heading in the right direction, which is a great thing.
Yeah, and I think the governments really do need to look at point of consumption tax and try not to kill the golden goose. But that is a conversation for another day. Kings, thanks very much. We'll get you back in shortly for Cook the Book. Let's look at Dano's ratings now, because they are always very interesting to unpack on a Monday morning. He does terrific work, does Dano Sullivan. We look at the top five there, Rich, and no great surprise to see who was the highest rated runner from the weekend.
No, I love Dano's ratings. Always puts a lot of context to the weekend. And you can see it up there. Mr. Brightside was the highest rated winner of the weekend. And I'll just quickly read out Dan's accompanying text to the tweet, because it always gives us a great idea of what he's talking about. So first up, Mr. Brightside, he says that Mr. Brightside was 103.8, is a level he's been to numerous times over 1,600 metres. Prior to Jenny was 103.1, short of the 107 and 105 peaks, but she's back with a big exclamation mark. Traffic Warden, a ripping return, 101.5 versus previous two-year-old peak of 98.4. That's a big boost for Traffic Warden. Grinsing a Bell, I'm going to come back to her in a second. Let's go to Sunshine in Paris. Sunshine in Paris, consistent with her good form, 101.4, up from 100. Growing Empire was not as dynamic as first up, where he ran 100 rating, eased down, but that takes nothing away from his reputation, given he was back to 1,100 metres in difficult conditions. And now each week, Dano always throws up a zinger that I feel just sort of comes to nowhere and didn't think that would pop such a high rating. And this week it is Grinsing a Bell. And we're going to just watch her in the Let's Elope Stakes here. So you can see she's gone to the lead here, and it's basically all over because they're not making any ground and they're all off the bit chasing her. And she just went on. It was a really emphatic win. She will go on to the Empire Rose over the Flemington Carnival. She'll have another run between now and then. But we remember prior to Jenny led all the way in the Empire Rose last spring, and Grinsing a Bell looks like she might be able to do the same thing. So Dano says about her, Grinzinger Bell earned her rating, but it's a big spike on her previous 96.7 best. Wow, so that is a big pop for Grinzinger Bell and surprised me, Rog.
Yep, she did the same thing last year, I think. Knocked me out the quaddy both times. So she can go to hell.
The life of a punter.
Now, one thing is punters. Sometimes we have a bet and it doesn't go well, but there are excuses. So we're going to bring in a segment called Stewards in 60, where I'm just going to rip through the key parts out of the Stewards report, which might explain why your bet went amiss on Saturday. Race one, Barrakeel. A post-race veterinary examination revealed a laceration to the left hind tendon area. Now, a veterinary clearance will be required prior to Barrakeel racing again. Race three, Drifting. I was very keen on Drifting. A post-race endoscopy of Drifting detected a degree of internal exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage, or EIPH, that may have affected the filly's racing performance. A veterinary clearance will be required prior to her racing again. Now, EIPH is a lot more common than you think, sometimes used as an excuse for a poor run. Race 8, the Maccabi Diva, pinstriped, of course, Group 1 winner last start. Eased down from the 200. Post-race veterinary examination revealed the gelding to be lame in the left hind. So a vet clearance required there. And Via Sestina, look, James McDonald said the mare raced flat, failed to respond to his riding in the heavy conditions. And the post-race vet examination revealed no significant findings. So Stewards will follow up with the stable. So no great excuses for Via Sestina, but certainly excuses for pinstriped in the Maccabi Diva Stakes. All right, let's move on now to Cook the Book. We'll welcome Kingsley back into the fold for Cook the Book. And Tom Hackett, of course, also joins us from Ladbrokes. Welcome, gentlemen. Tommy, we'll start with you. Maccabi Diva Stakes, Flemington Race 8. Big drift on Via Sestina. Was this a matter of her going up too short, the track conditions, or simply money coming for the likes of Brightside and Pride of Jenny?
No, I think the track condition definitely did play a little bit of a role there, Rog, because we still did see money for Via Sestina, but it certainly wasn't the avalanche that we might have suspected when she did open as short as she did at the $2.20. It was an interesting race from a betting standpoint on our end, the Maccabi Diva, that we sort of did see money spread around all the leading contenders. The punters certainly didn't drop right off Pride of Jenny after her first up flop. Mr. Brightside is such a popular horse with the public. I think no matter what, even if the pros don't get around Mr. Brightside, he's always well back because now he's won so many races that punters, they feel a bit of a sense of loyalty to him. And he's sort of got that cult hero status as well. So he's always well back. He was supported. Even Antino, we saw a little bit of money with us as well. So it was a funny race. The punters certainly didn't narrow in on one horse. There was money for basically all the horses there at the top of the market.
Loyalty from punters to horses can be great for bookmakers, but unfortunately, Brightside keeps winning. Kings, the Wolf Den model was very keen on Via Sestina. Did you keep backing her the more she got out, or did you jump off? And you were bullish about her in the Coxway too, if you jumped off there now as well.
I didn't handle this race well at all. From a betting viewpoint, I did, because I didn't bet too big on the race. I waited on Via Sestina price-wise, and I took about $2.90. I got Via Sestina. I didn't bet up too much, but I actually shouldn't have got so carried away as what I did with Via Sestina. But from a betting point of view, they only wanted two horses that I could see. Mr. Brightside very well backed at $4 straight away into three, and then eased back out. And Pride of Jenny was really well backed. So once again, the professional bigger money has gravitated towards those on-pace horses. Pride of Jenny was a fantastic run, and I think she will continue to improve. I think from a form perspective, Via Sestina has put in two good performances now, both off slow tempos, and two poor performances, both when Pride of Jenny was in the race. So from a profiling point of view, that is very interesting. Also, I am not sacking Via Sestina at all. I think a grand final is the Cox Plate. Over 2,000 metres, she'll be better suited and we'll get a better price. But let's wait and see.
Well, her record is certainly much, much better over 2,000 metres. That's her pet trip, as we know. Tom, race five at Flemington, the Archer, the Golden Ticket in the Melbourne Cup. I know personally you were keen on Berkshire Breeze. Did the market gravitate to him, or was it Point King, who the winner? Was it well found?
Yeah, it was a funny race, this one, Rog. It was Berkshire Breeze was drifted right out late, and then there was a little bit of a late crunch, but it was certainly not wanted on the day for the Ladbrokes book in particular. A little bit of money around for Point King. It got as short as $3.70. Then it drifted back out again, and then was a little bit of a late crunch as well. while horses like, there was money at a price for horses like Interpretation was actually well backed. Hit the Road Jack, who ended up running second, was 41s into $18. He actually ended up in the book. It was the worst result for Ladbrokes in the race. So despite the fact Point King was reasonably well backed, it ended up being a winning result for Ladbrokes. And some of those roughies were the worst results for the book. So I think the traders did well here. We sort of set the book up nicely, and then it would have been a bit stiff if Hit the Road Jack had won at that price and knocked the traders off when they'd set up the book so nicely.
Was this a race you played in, Kings?
I didn't get too heavily involved. I was talking about Bachi Breeze on the Saturday set, and then the rumour went around that he was going to go back. He did go back, and I think that was reflected in the market. Point King, as Tom said, was a real interesting one. So $5.50 they put up and then smashed in very early in betting, like on Wednesday, into $3.70. I just want to make a few points around that. One is that that's not weight of money at all. That's smart money that comes in. So smart money on a Wednesday, and bookies tend to overreact to that smart money now. So $5.50 into $3.70 is a really, really big go off, not a big weight of money. So on the day of the race, we saw Point King drift back out to $4.60, $4.80, $5 in a couple of places. But 2 points. The first point is don't panic and think you've got to take the $3.80. My second point is when you see the drift on the day, $3.80 out to $4.80, don't be alarmed by that either and be turned off by that. And be aware that that smart money did come in early on Wednesday.
Very sage advice there, Kingsley. Now, race 8 at Rose Hill. I know you were keen on Storm Boy, but not at that even money quote. Did you stay out in the end?
No, I didn't. I took $2.10 Storm Boy. And the reason why I did have a bit extra on Storm Boy as well, and the reason being that Mick Price came on with Bustling and said that he wasn't going to take Storm Boy on. So I thought the only other pace in the race was a node. So Waterhouse isn't going to take on Waterhouse and Bot. So I thought Bustling's out of the way, Node's out of the way. Stormboy is going to get another easy lead. And that was reflected in the betting. Stormboy was really the only one they wanted, $2.10 into $1.90. We saw him miss the kick and then have to go around. I'm not convinced that that cost him the race, but Linebacker was too good on the day. Node was a really, really good run as well, which handed up the lead to Stormboy and then came back and beat him. And Linebacker as well into fourth was a really impressive run.
Tom, in terms of Storm Boy, the only one they wanted, was that reflected in the book? Was it a great result for Ladbrokes to get him rolled?
Yeah, absolutely was, Roger. Storm Boy was extremely well backed. Not the best backed horse of the day at Rose Hill. That was Jolly Star, but Storm Boy was right up there. And Traffic Warden, despite the fact, if you listen to James Cummings, he always wants to talk about Traffic Warden. He's always bringing him up. People asking him about broadsiding, and he'll somehow segue it into a question about Traffic Warden. So I think Godolphin have got a big opinion of this horse, but punters didn't really have too much on Traffic Warden. Ended up being a big result for the book. It was a $359,000 winner for the book. But Traffic Warden, the futures markets moved very quickly, straight into favouritism for the Golden Rose now with Ladbrokes.
And if Jolly Star was the best backed, it's been a fat day in Sydney for Ladbrokes, I imagine. What was your best and your worst results in terms of a race at the weekend? And how did you fare overall in Sydney and Melbourne?
Yeah, Jolly Star was the best backed horse anywhere in the country on Saturday. And so getting it beaten was a very big result. Obviously, Sunshine in Paris was supported, but there was just such a weight of money for Jolly Star and a lot of multis as well, that with a lot of Jolly Star into Storm Boy was very popular. So that race was a $436,000 winner for the Ladbrokes book. That was our best result in Sydney. And that, along with Traffic Warden winning and then a good result in the last, was enough for us to finish in front in Sydney. Flemington was a bit more up and down, got a good result early. Moby Dick was a $243,000 winner for the book in race one. But then Growing Empire was the best backed horse on the Flemington card. It was backed as if unbeatable, and it proved to be the case. It was a $427,000 loser for the Ladbrokes book. But then the combination of Chrysaor, Gringsing a Bell, back-to-back races where there was very little punter interest in either of those horses was put the book in a really good position. Punters got a little bit back with Mr. Brightside, and Barclay Square was well backed in the last. It was a $159,000 loser for Ladbrokes, but we'd got enough out of Chrysaor and Gringsing a Bell in particular to still finish in front in Melbourne as well.
Yeah, I was really bullish about my VS Astina, Storm Boy, Jolly Star and Growing Empire four-leg multi, and I got one of them. So, Kings, I hope it was a better day for you. How did you fare? Sunshine in Paris, I know you were keen on watching the Saturday set last week. Did she get you out of a jam?
Yeah, I ended up having a winning day, mainly on the country races. I found a couple at down south as well and across the border. I was dizzy by the end of the day. There were that many races on. Even the last race at Toowoomba was one of my best bets of the day and got beat that far on the line. So I needed a couple of glasses of red after the last, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, if I'm betting on Toowoomba late on a Saturday, I've had a stinker. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. We will catch you again next week. Cook the book on .com and the Den Mondays. Rich, we'll get you back in now as we look toward next week or this coming weekend as it is. Underwood Stakes is the feature this weekend at Caulfield. Now, we haven't got word on Mr. Brightside as yet as to whether he will be running. I would highly doubt that he will, according to Trav Noonan, who does God's work with his early fields. I'll always take his word. So he's a $2 favourite at the moment. I suggest he comes out and Pericles gets his chance at a Group 1. Hutchie's ATM, Munamek, will be there and just deliver a bit more prize money into Clint Hutchison's bank account. And also we get to see the return of the Australasian Oaks winner, Coco Sun. Faulkner Park, the other one, a key watch here, Rich, from the Annabelle Neesham Yard.
Yeah, absolutely. Faulkner Park on a Caulfield Cup path, and he was super impressive in the Q22, one of the potential stars this spring, so it'll be good to see him. Platts de Carousel, I've mentioned Sam Friedman before. I was out at his stable and asked him who are some of your horses to follow. He did mention Plastic Carousel. Thinks Plastic Carousel's a great chance in the Caulfield Cup. So, yeah, it'll be a great Underwood Stakes. And there's a lot of other accompanying races on the Caulfield meeting as well. Why don't we roll into them?
Well, that's right. The Naturalism, the Caulfield Cup, as you mentioned, this is a golden ticket race into the Caulfield Cup. And Vow and Declare was scratched because of track conditions on the weekend. So we'll get to see the one-time Melbourne Cup winner go around here. Q Tempesta from the Hayes camp. Also, Deny Knowledge is actually in the likely fields for both the Naturalism and the Underwood. I don't think it's going to run in both races, Rich. I think they're going to have to make a choice.
No, especially the Freemans who don't like to pump their horses too hard. I think they will certainly only be racing in one of them. But yeah, it's a nice looking race. Vow and Declare Melbourne Cup winner. So whoever wins that gets a golden ticket in the Caulfield Cup.
Yeah, the Testa Rossa also on this weekend. Rosa, yeah. Another Will versus the Rising Star in Craig here. Here to Shock's been very honest this preparation as well. Buffalo River set some pace up in front. Not a bad little race, just the sort of eight runners there according to Trav.
Yep, and the great lead-up race towards the Toorak as well.
Yeah, the Guineas Prelude. The Guineas. We talk about the three-year-olds. Guineas is another one that's looking like a great race. Angel Capital, who we spoke about last week. Bazasto, who runs second in that race, to Angel Capital, also in here. So Epimel's, it should be a nice little race as well. We'll see how many go around, and I'm sure there'll be more than just the sort of six horses that are listed there. What are the highlights in Sydney this weekend, Rich?
Yeah, Sydney's got a really strong meeting. This is just a basic snapshot of it. Seven Stakes, that's a Group 1 weight for age race. Fangirl Zugotcha Kovalika, that'll be a great race. The shorts, I Am Me, who of course won the Concord Stakes, beat Bella Nipotina. She'll be in the shorts. She'll be short in that. The big race, the T-Rose, that is going to be absolutely fantastic. Autumn Glow, one of the biggest stars on the scene, taking on Manal and Amina. And then also the Kingston Town. So Zardozi looking for redemption after being disappointing in the Wink Stakes. So really epic day of racing, and we will give you a best set we can in the Saturday set, and we will also record all the action in the Den for the Saturday session. The Saturday session proves very popular.
All right, Rich, as we know, anything that's done by the Wolf Den crew is compulsory viewing, so keep your eyes on YouTube, on racing.com. We love the work you're doing there. We love doing this show, and we love what racing we've got ahead this weekend. Rich, can't wait for this weekend's racing yet again. I can't wait to catch up with you next Monday for .com and the Den Mondays, where we unpack everything that mattered.
We're finding our groove, Rog. I love it, mate, and I can't wait to be back here again next Monday. Let's go. Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.